Blog Talk Radio.
Tomorrow you're buried in the castle.
Wake up and live. Wake up and live. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, where, in case you were wondering, yes, we got off to a little bit of a delayed start, but it is live radio. However, you're at the right place at the right time. Here at Progressive News Weekly, we bring you news and information that's gathered from around the nation, and we typically bring you guests that are well qualified to speak to the topic at hand for any given program, and today is no exception. Today we have a special guest, and I mean really, I use that term special, I'll be very honest, frequently. However, today it truly is a special treat because I have a guest that's, well, been someone I've respected for, well, believe it or not, it's been a decade. And he, as I pride myself in doing, brings truth to power consistently. In a sense, he's a mentor. So whenever you can have a friend and a mentor, it's always a treat to do what you do out of love. And for those of you who are not on the mail list and you'd like to be, because those of you who are know who I'm referring to, yes, I am purposely putting a carrot out there. Send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A-1-8, at MSN.com, and then you'd be privy to who I'm referring to right now. Let me just say a little bit about my guest before we bring him to the air, because he has very limited time. And so with that said, my next guest is a seasoned, and that's an underscore and not putting it lightly, a seasoned veteran of media, 30-year plus of news, TV, and radio. He's the founder and executive director of BlackAgendaReport.com that you hear me so frequently talk about on these airwaves. And I'll be talking about that more later on in the program, because I believe everyone should be tuning in and subscribing to that particular medium. It's a popular website dedicated to bringing leading-edge news on what's specifically happening, affecting at least blacks, as well as the entire nation. And this evening, our guest is going to provide some very insightful perspective of not only what happened in our last presidential election most recently, but some of the implications of where it might take us, and some of the misnomers that you may have and not realize about this whole political environment. So without further ado, let me just welcome Mr. Glenn Ford to the airwaves. Glenn, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. It's been a while.
Yes, thanks for the invitation and for the kind words, Daryl.
Well, it's just true. It's just the truth. You do speak truth to power. You know, I frequently visit the site, the Black Agenda Report site. Folks, that's blackagendareport.com. I'll repeat that several times while we're on the air here with Glenn, and even afterwards. He has a limited amount of time. Glenn, let's get right to the point here. We just had a riveting election that took place. And I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us. You know, it was a time when we frequently, well, I know I've been off the air for about 6 months or so, just situations. But I'd like to have you, before I get into the interview and forget and you're gone, I'd like to have you come back sometime in the not-distant future, I'd like to say near future, to continue this, because you know how time flies. You're a radio TV man, more seasoned than I. We're not going to continue this dialogue to its end. So would you be willing to come back and join us sometime soon?
Sure.
All right. So, Glenn, I'm going to hand the mic over to you. Your perspective, and by the way, I know you have a program, I'd like you, before we're done, to share that with the listeners as well, because it's very enlightening and insightful. What's your perspective of what happened? Now, are you surprised, first of all?
Yeah.
With the election?
I was surprised at the outcome. I had been predicting that Donald Trump would lose by a landslide, and was proved very, very wrong. But my prediction was based upon what really stood out. It made this election so very different before the outcome, and that was that the entirety of the ruling class, I'm talking about Wall Street, I'm talking about the folks with money, the people who run this society, and their think tanks, and very importantly, the corporate media, all of them had crowded into Hillary Clinton's big tent. That is, when Donald Trump won the Republican nomination based largely on his promise to restrict these corporate trade deals. That scared the hell out of Wall Street, because if there's anything that they believe, like the Bible, it is that money should flow wherever money wants to flow, and carry jobs with it wherever that takes them. So this was just anathema to them. And then he said that he was opposed to regime change and wanted to have better relations with Russia. And so we see the entirety of what folks call the national security establishment. These are the people who plot and scheme U.S. Wars overseas. They rushed into Hillary Clinton's tent. And, of course, she already had Wall Street, because they've been paying her for years, $250,000 a pop for speeches, and her husband as well. And so we saw all of this ruling class alignment on Hillary's side of the table, and I could not imagine that Donald Trump could overcome that kind of institutional strength. My idea was the rulers put this system together for their own purposes, and they can handle it, but they couldn't.
Well, interesting. It seems as though he beat them at their own game, so to speak. Well, the strategist that he is, to that extent, hindsight, 2020.
He beat them with far, far, far less money and with an opposition media that is almost across the board, except, for, of course, for Fox News. But otherwise, in terms of endorsements by newspapers, I think he only got a handful, less than a handful of endorsements from newspapers across the country. So it was pretty solidly the corporate media, the national security state, and Wall Street all on Hillary's side. And no, I could not imagine that she could not win. When people are looking at the data here, it does appear, and of course, when I talk about these numbers, no one should draw the conclusion that race was not the major factor. It always is in U.S. Elections. Race is at the core of politics in the United States. It's inextricable. The language of U.S. politics is makes no sense unless you understand the racial environment of the country. But in terms of what put Donald Trump over, it appears that those white, mostly working class voters that voted for Obama in 2012 and then switched to Donald Trump in this election, provided much of the numbers that pushed him over the top. Plus, Republicans turned out in significantly larger numbers than Democrats did. So a combination of white working class folks, especially in the Great Lakes states, who had previously supported Obama, plus a bigger turnout, is what pushed Trump over the top. But I thought it would take a lot more than that.
Let me ask, do you think it was somewhat of an indictment? And you talk a lot about that previous administration and what they were not doing, and some of the things they were doing that they shouldn't have been doing. Do you think it was somewhat of an indictment on that? Well, to say, you know, maybe they did pick up on some of the things that you had been talking about.
Well, of course, those working class folks, their votes were heavily hinged on Donald Trump's opposition to NAFTA, the big corporate trade agreement that Bill Clinton pushed through in the 1990s, and his opposition to TPP and its counterpart corporate trade treaty with Europe. Those things count a great deal to industrial workers, and it should be no mystery at all that they would vote for someone who fervently opposes them. Nobody believed Hillary Clinton when she said she was not for TPP. That carried no credibility whatsoever. She had been enthusiastically for it only a couple of years ago, and her husband is the one who pushed through NAFTA. So that there was no credibility there, and that alone could account for the swing of voters in those Midwestern states that put him over the top in the Electoral College. But when people talk about their fear of Donald Trump, and I'm scared of all these American presidents. None of them are mine. None of them going back to the founding of the Republic are my president. But when people talk about their fear of what Trump will do and say that he's a fascist, well, they haven't defined fascism. And whatever he might do in terms of repression of folks, he will use the tools that were left to him, many of them newly minted by Barack Obama himself. It was Barack Obama who raised the level of Pentagon transfers of weapons and tanks and military equipment to local police departments from around $30 million a year in the year before he took office to more than $700 million a year in 2014. So if we're talking about black folks and Black Lives Matter demonstrators getting vamped on by militarized police, thank Barack Obama for giving them the equipment. If we're talking about fascist moves like locking dissidents up, well, it was President Obama who pushed through a bill that is now law that allows the U.S. military on U.S. soil to detain indefinitely, that is, forever if they want to, American citizens without charging them with a crime and without a trial. Of course, you can't have a trial because you won't even be charged. George Bush never considered trying to push such a bill through Congress because he knew that the Democrats would fight him. It wouldn't get through Congress. People would have charged him with trying to become a tin pot fascist himself. But Barack Obama was able to pass that bill. That is law. It wasn't an Obama bill. It was a U.S. president's bill. And so Donald Trump now has those powers, and the list goes on. So when folks talk about fascism today, they really need to explain what they mean by fascism and how it differs from the powers and behaviors of Barack Obama and George Bush before him. This is not a defense of Donald Trump at all. I'm saying that folks need to get serious about resistance to these to the rulers of this country and not run around just spouting words that they don't even understand.
Wow, you know, your most recent article I was reading, I love the title, None of Them Have Ever Been My President. You talk about just that, you know. It depends on what this President Trump is going to do with the tools that have been given him. Let's not forget it was under the watch, and you know, just to paraphrase, under the watch of Obama that so many of people of color were gunned down in the streets under his oppressive rule. So there are those that, and you, I know you are very comfortable with this, that would say some of those words are blasphemy because they're such supporters of basically anything that Obama has done, you know, stating that you can't blame him for the problems of Black America, and I deal with this week in and week out on my program, because he had no support and anything he tried to do was shot down. What do you say to that?
Well, nobody forced him to you know, the Pentagon is under the executive branch of government. And so it wasn't Republicans in Congress that forced the Pentagon to force these hundreds of millions of dollars of weapons on local police departments. The Pentagon did it because they got the big okay and encouragement from Barack Obama. And that's why those transfers of weapons to the local cops went through the roof under him. That is him taking action. Nobody, the Republicans didn't force President Obama to put Black Lives Matter activists under constant FBI surveillance, but we know that they did. We know that the FBI put Black Lives Matter activists all across the country under surveillance because the FBI said so, and the FBI reports to the Justice Department, and the Justice Department reports to President Obama. And so it was Obama putting Black Lives Matter folks under that kind of microscope. Black folks and everybody else who voted for Obama voted for an imaginary person. And then as he proceeded to govern, they simply chose to ignore those actions that contradicted what they thought the imaginary Obama would do, or they would blame what happened on Republicans who had no power to make him take executive decisions that only he could make. And now they're going to make up a phony legacy for him as well and teach their children about what this imaginary president did, leaving out most of it.
So it really isn't about this Democratic president. You know, you've heard me many times. Often I just say left wing, right wing, same bird, same regime in effect is what I believe I'm hearing you say.
You know, when Obama and Hillary were battling for the nomination back in 2008, we were writing in Black Agenda Report that there was not a dime's worth of difference between them, that they were politically identical. And that this attempt to act as if it's the choice of a lifetime politically or ideologically was just phony as hell. It was a choice in terms of race, it would have, but not in terms of politics. And that's why, of course, she became his right-hand person on foreign policy as Secretary of State. And he, of course, wanted to be handing the baton to her in the election of 2016 because they're the same.
And he'll get
those $250,000 fees from corporations too after he leaves the White House, just like Bill Clinton did.
Well, it seems like he's just part of the good old boys club.
This is how it's done. This is why people run for office, and this is how they retire without really retiring. And in fact, he'll have three presidential libraries, which is more than any other president. One in Chicago, one in Hawaii, and I believe the other one in New York or Washington.
Wow, that's true. You know, as we look back, as you said, he's basically protecting his legacy now, and it should be no surprise that he, you know, endorses Trump by saying, you know, let's just give the man a chance. Because from what I see, he's basically passing the baton amongst the good old boys club. You know, after all is said and done and the smoke clears, I agree with you 100%. No secret that you have stated you couldn't pay you to vote for Hillary Clinton. There are those, again, second time in this program alone, I'm repeating, there are those that would say that's blasphemy because you basically pushed Trump in. No regrets.
Well, now here's what I have to say that, and I voted for the Green Party.
You voted independent.
The folks were saying that a vote for the Green Party is a vote for Trump. But I think it's pretty clear, especially after the election returns, that Bernie Sanders would have done better, probably would have won against Trump. He was strong in those areas, especially the Midwest, where Clinton was weak. And so if that is true, and that argument is a strong one, then a vote for Hillary Clinton in the primaries instead of Bernie Sanders was a vote for Trump.
That's a different perspective. And you know, it makes some sense. It really does. And
you can play those games. You know, the numbers allow you to play those games to infinity, because you can always pull out a segment of voters and say if only they had voted this way instead of that way, then there would have been a different outcome. But you can chop the electorate up into so many pieces. You could say that if the Lithuanian Americans had only stuck by Hillary, Trump would not be president. And I bet you it would come out
where do we
mathematically
go here?
True.
Well, probably so. But there was a significant number of blacks that did vote for Trump. There was a lower turnout, meaning people were not feeling Hillary. I think people were getting messages such as yours and mine. And so that, to me, that's a good news story. And
yes.
You have to be careful. I had a relative that would stop speaking to me when I meant talk like that. I mean, this is becoming very divisive in our country.
Well, that sounds like my relatives.
You too. It's very interesting. I see a division coming here, but I also see some positive things in that the conscience has been stirred significantly, in that I think that bodes well for a movement such as the one that you and I have been talking about. Where do we go from here? As I know your time is limited. You only have a minute left, if that. What's your thoughts before you come back on in the next show?
Well, of course, we have to do more of what people call social movements, that is, on the ground, grassroots, organizing, confronting the powers that be. But there also must be, at some point, the creation of a strong social democratic party in this country. Under this duopoly system, the Democrats sit on a whole electorate claiming this political space as their own, that stretches from some conservative Democrat in Kentucky all the way to folks who got little red books in their pocket. And this is nuts. These people do not belong in the same party. In everywhere else in the developed world, there would be a party of the left, and probably it would not only be a major contender for power in the United States, but by all rights, most of Black America can be described as social democratic. The Black political spectrum is way to the left of the white political spectrum. When you get down to the hardcore bread and butter issues, Black folks who self-describe themselves as conservatives are more to the left than most white folks who call themselves liberals. So this social democratic arena is where Black folks naturally belong, there and in independent Black politics. With the breakdown of the duopoly system and the rise of Trump is a symptom of that. That leaves that opens up the space to fill it with what should be there, a new party of the left, and much, much stronger grassroots agitation as well.
And I agree. And that's why, from my perspective, I thought it wasn't necessarily a negative thing. I just have the perspective there's always something positive to be held. And from what you just said, this really could be an opportunity to bridge a gap that's just been there. It's an expectant of African Americans that you would vote one side or the other, that duopoly that you talk about.
If
and
people seize the time, it is certainly an opportunity. If people conclude that all you have to do to reverse this situation is patch up the Democratic Party and put some other Hillary type up in 2020, then we have not made any progress at all from this.
I agree with you. But as long as we have situations like I would say your family and mine, we've got some work to do, because there are those that would say, you know, that it's a futile effort, and it's so we've got some work to do. Glenn,
that's right. But the studies show, the numbers show that that young black folks are not so wedded to the Democratic Party as somehow the salvation of black people, and are open to new forms of organizing.
Well, Bernie did prove that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good sign, and you're right. And I do believe that Bernie had a better chance of winning. And I think that that goes back to just the regime that was in place, that she started out with I don't know how many electoral votes to jump start her whole political campaign. And we could go back and, you know, analyze this a thousand different ways. But I'm with you that
right. And it goes beyond just electoral politics. We have to remember that after Ferguson, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton couldn't just come on the scene and take charge of black community protest meetings. They'd get booed out of the room by young folks who did not recognize them as being their leaders, young folks who had their own leaders. Leaders come out of struggle. And as long as we have a grassroots movement that is turning up, struggling, advocating, and agitating, that's the soil from which the future leadership grows. And these other folks who are household names in your youth and mine, they'll fall by the wayside.
I agree with you 110% in that note. Glenn, I thank you so much. I wish we could have you on for the remainder of the 20 minutes we have left, but I know that you have an engagement. Share with us some of the things you're doing before you leave, would you, and your programs that you have.
Well, we do the same thing every week because we are periodical, and there's a new edition of Black Agenda Report every Wednesday. I'm personally looking forward to a conference that's going to be held in Philadelphia December 9th and 10th. It's about radical politics in this new age. Tony Montero and the Black Radical Organizing Committee are staging this, and I think we'll have some productive conversations.
But can someone get information on that?
We'll be writing about it in Black Agenda Report.
On blackagendareport.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you still have your program on the air as well that folks can tune into. Is it Mondays still? You're right?
You're talking about Black Agenda Radio. Yeah, we post
radio.
That on Mondays. It's also aired on the Progressive Radio Network at 11 o'clock in the morning on Mondays, but we post it on our site shortly thereafter on Mondays.
So we can also get information on that on blackagendareport.com. Well, folks, you just had a sprinkling. For those of you who are new to Progressive News Weekly and have not heard Glenn Ford before, you now know the dynamo that I talked about at the beginning of the program. Go to blackagendareport.com for more information on what's really going on in our society from a black perspective. Glenn, thank you much. You know I'll be back in touch. I want to continue some of this dialogue and maybe peel back the onion a little bit more with some more specific questions and dialogues I had, but I was cognizant of the time, the limited time that you had. Thank you again. Tell hello, say a good hello to all my friends over at BlackAgendaReport.com.
All right, and thank you, brother.
And thank you. Well, you have been listening to. Did you have something you wanted to close on? Okay. So you've been listening to Mr. Glenn Ford, as I mentioned, a 30-year veteran of news, TV, radio, founder of, and executive editor of BlackAgendaReport.com. You know, folks, at some point, we have to step back and, as we sometimes say, keep it real. Yeah, our fathers and forefathers, you know, I can go back that far because, you know, there was a time when the Republican Party was the dominant party of African Americans. So I'll go back two, maybe three generations. It hasn't been that long. So we have to go into our history to really, you know, have an appreciation for where we stand. We don't want, we as an African American community and those who subscribe to and support the well-being of the African American community, you must and we must understand that we cannot and should not give a pass, just a blind pass to any party, whether it's Republican or Democrat or Green or Libertarian, just blindly because of a title and a so-called legacy. And my concern is that is what was happening. I am pleased that America was shaken up. Now, am I pleased that we have, by some standards, a fascist, a misogynist, that I can go on and use adjectives for our existing president? Well, you know, one thing that, from my perspective, you have to say that he spoke truth to power as well. He stood up to a Bush and said, please. He did everything but call him an idiot. And not that I subscribe to that kind of language, because it's the pot, in, by some people's perspective, calling the kettle black. But he stood up to the regime. And so I find it interesting to see where this is going to actually head. The appointments that he's made recently, I'm disappointed with, of course, not surprised, because at the end of the day, he is a billionaire businessman. At the end of the day, we know some of his history as well. Remember the Central Park 5 and how he put that ad in the paper, you know, calling for them to be given the death penalty. I mean, this is the Donald Trump. Did he come out with addressing something that no one wanted to touch? Oh, yes, he did, the immigration issue. And, folks, immigration is a problem. And I don't know why folks, you know, have this issue of, oh, that's the sacred cow. You can't speak to that. It's okay, folks. It's okay. You know, Trump won Florida on the backs of Hispanic and Latino. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, this land is our land. And I'm not talking about just deporting randomly Latino and Hispanic. I've mentioned before, and I don't mean to sound like, oh, some of my best friends are Latino. You know, like some of my best friends are black. You know, that's not what this is about. I mean, the truth is, my own daughter has a godparent who is Latino. Close friend. Like a sister. So that's not what this is. It's not trying to vilify, and I'm not saying that to say some of my best friends, because that was before all of this ever came out some 20 years ago. And the individual is still very, very close to me, her and her family, consider me part of their family. So it's not just about Latino, it's about protecting our borders. And so, yes, I do agree with some of the things that he said. Do I endorse him? Well, no. But as Glenn Ford said, you have to read his most recent article on Black Agenda Report. None of these folks have been my president. I got bamboozled. I got bamboozled by Barack Obama. And I'm not happy about that. And I know by some standards it's blasphemy. And I know I have relatives, bloodline, who I love, who may say to me, and to some extent I pulled a surprise on one of my relatives. I said something that probably almost gave her a heart attack. I should have been more careful. You know, what if I voted for Trump? And she literally was ready to hang up. But at the end of the day, we couldn't even have dialogue. So that was a joke I should not have played. But what I'm getting at, folks, is, you know, as Black Americans and those who, as I said earlier, subscribe to the well-being and equality of all Americans, we should be able to have some dialogue. I mean, we should be able to have some dialogue in terms of who's the elected president, whether it was Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, or Donald Trump, or George Bush. So all I'm saying is there were some things that I did agree with. That's just, you know, my point on that. I talk about a scenario for the last 8 years. My program has been on the air. We're approaching our 10th year. And 2 years into it, or 2.5 years into it, I had Althea Shaw on my program. Some of you know the story. She's the aunt of Jamil Shaw Jr. He was murdered by an illegal alien, by an undocumented immigrant who was a gangbanger. I mean, we have enough criminals here. So if you're here illegally, this is a duh. Shouldn't you not be allowed to be here? I mean, let's break this down into a form where maybe everyone can relate to it, because we're talking Los Angeles, California. But let's say, you know, basically Front Street, Main Street, First Street, USA. Or let's talk about even more so Neighborhood Street, USA. And you have not Latino, doesn't have to be. It could be Italian, it could be Irish. Someone move into the neighborhood who you know is there illegally and who you also know is a criminal or pedophile, which is a criminal. Do you say, well, they're illegal and they came from a struggling situation, so we're going to not discriminate against them because they've already been ostracized for their situation, being a minority in that situation? It just, from my perspective, it doesn't make good sense. So we've got to protect our borders. And I'd like to hear your perspective. What's the counter of protecting the borders? Not protecting them? I mean, should your borders be open, wide open? Why can't we have that dialogue? That's all I'm asking. And I understand that there are good folks that come across that border. But don't we need rules for your city? Typical city USA, wherever you live, and I have listeners from all over the country, wherever you live, doesn't matter. St. Louis, Los Angeles, Reno, Atlanta, Tampa, Syracuse, I mean, wherever. Do you subscribe to allowing criminals from another state to reside in your state? Do you believe a law should be established that because that criminal is of a certain gender or religion or race, that they should not be identified? I'm not talking about profiling. Let's draw that thin line. And yeah, I'm harping on this one because this is a big one. So this sanctuary cities, that to me is a big problem. So whatever this man, this president brings, and all the flaws that he has, and he has plenty of them, just like all of us, but ours may not be to the extent that his is, because his is so far-reaching that he can impact us in ways that we can't impact others. So no, my head's not in the sand, folks. But I'm simply saying, he is the president. I know there's lots of efforts of talking about let's impeach this person. Folks, realistically, barring something unforeseen, which is possible. I mean, look, we're now under the a species of an elected Donald Trump, which most, I'm talking probably 90%, didn't think would happen. Barring something totally unforeseen, he is going to be the next president. So the question is, what do we do? Do we just get mad and go mad? Or do we collectively step back and say, okay, how can we lift ourselves up? It comes back to that saying that I've mentioned, what's the best way to grow good grass? What's the best way to grow good grass? One of my relatives taught me this prior to passing on, and I'll never forget it. And I took it as a metaphor, because I asked him as a literal. I had a problem that was about 18 years ago growing grass. As simple as it may sound, it would just die, or weeds would, you know, seem to just pop up, and I'd try to kill them. And he said to me, because the first time I met him, it was an in-law, his grass looked like carpet. And he says, Darryl, let me tell you, son, the best way to really grow good grass is to keep growing good grass. And so the best way to get rid of weeds is to grow good grass. So if we're dealing with a weed of a president, if we are dealing with a weed of a president, don't get upset with me because I said if. Because millions of people projected that this man would not be president. So I see goodness in this. So many good things. You know, his theme song, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. Sometimes you get what you need. And this, to me, is a wake-up call, folks. It's a wake-up call for me. I can't tell you enough how much a wake-up call it is for me and my family. So we got to get up off the duff. If if I was starting to move and do what I needed to do, I need to put the jets on right now to get it going. So, folks, whatever gifts you've been given, the gift of creativity, the gift of influence through your ability to communicate, the gift of vision, being a visionary, the gift of hope. Whatever gift you've been given, as Adam Clayton Powell says, let's use what's in our hands. I'm not going to point the finger at you. I got to start with me. Let's just make a commitment to use what's in our hands. And I understand the whole piece about, oh, the next three generations could be affected by the judges he could put in. I'm not worried about the next three generations. I'm worried about the generation we're dealing with right now. Because no matter what comes down the road in three generations, if we set the good grass right now, it will not matter. It will not matter. So I got work to do, folks. For those that know me more personally than others, well, you know how much work I got to do. My program needs to be more effective, more efficient. Just starting right here with communicating with you. So my commitment to you is that that will happen. I will do that. I've been talking for a long time about utilizing my skill and knowledge set in the health arena. So that's all been put in place. And now it's time to put the jets on. So folks, I'm just going to close with, it's not always what we want. It's not always what we want. It's often, if not for the most part, what we need. And what we need to do is get it together. Remember that song, Get It Together or Leave It Alone? So I thank you for tuning in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. I thank Mr. Glenn Ford for tuning in and joining us. We were expected to have Mr. Ronald Crenshaw join us again, and he was not able to join us, but he's been bringing some very enlightening information. You know, these last 3 or 4 weeks, we've been focusing on the political arena, and it's basically the only time that I spend this much time in that area of politics on my program is about every 4 years during this very important time when we, as a united people, have to make a crucial determination of who our national leader will be. And I believe, unlike in my recent memory, any other time, the outcome of this particular election was the best yet. I hope no one fell out, had a heart attack, fainted, or is anger beyond belief with that statement. But folks, it's just true. And if you let yourself settle down and take a deep breath, and his dad used to say, bite the bullet, because it's not going anywhere, I think you'll find yourself within you. That grassroots movement that Glenn was talking about, let's get it on, right? As Marvin would say, let's get it on. So I'm going to end with one of my favorite artists, add a little levity, but it's time for us to get up off of that thing and do what we know we need to do. So until next week, which is the holiday, Thursday, we'll be more than likely doing a replay, just so you know, of one of our prior programs. And I always like to look back. It could be from this year or years past, something very special, unless I deem to bring on a live guest. But more than likely, I'll either be traveling myself. So until we come back again, I wish every one of you a very safe and truly a happy Thanksgiving. Give thanks for all that you have and all that you don't have too, because you got to be careful for what you ask for and what you get. So let's just give thanks and get ourselves prepared as we go into the next, figuratively speaking, season. In the season of our lives where it's time to turn things around for a better, bigger, and greater existence. From my heart to yours, my spirit to yours, my soul to yours, with love, I wish you peace and blessings. So get up off of that thing.